Just a brief few words to say that we appreciate the good intentions of people who had planned to come to the dinner last Wednesday night and were not able to make it. I just want to report that there was a dinner in honor of my wife and myself. Wednesday night, and it was the night of the storm, the storm of 2006. It will be remembered for many, many years to come. And why the storm had to start just about an hour and 15 minutes before the dinner was scheduled. It started at about a quarter after six, and I'm looking out the window and I tell my wife, "Bela, it's sticking." So we left earlier, and it still took us from Har Nof to Bayit Vegan. It took us about 45 minutes, and we saw all of the cars as they were sliding around. It was extremely difficult. We got there 7:35. The dinner was called for 7:30. There were about six, seven people there, the people who had organized the dinner, and we were nearly ready to throw in the towel when three or four people walked in at 5 to 8. And so we decided, okay, you know, we'll all have double portions. Maybe we'll send all the food to some yeshiva someplace. The caterer was yelling at me as though, you know, I brought the snow. You know, I brought the snow. Even though the fact is that the caterer had said 3-4 days earlier that we should put it off from Wednesday to Thursday night. So we thought that he's an Israeli. If they say that there's a possibility of snow, these Israelis get scared because it's an inch in Yerushalayim and the city is paralyzed. Yes, paralyzed. That was a good word. I like it. Okay. Anyway, Minas Shemayim, about a quarter after eight, people started trickling. The trickle became a flood. By 8:30, the hall was full, and we had an absolutely beautiful, beautiful dinner. It was I give my balabatim. I give them a yashikayach for having done a wonderful, wonderful, impressive, dignified job. And as I said to people, said it then, nobody is ever going to forget that dinner. Because everybody who came really had to battle the elements. And we can understand people who were waiting for buses that never came, were looking for taxis that weren't there, and just had to go back home and, you know, cry their eyes out. But it was, that's it. Okay, very good. So now, you know, the next dinner will have to be in about 20 years when I retire from the Avram Silver Jerusalem College for adults.
You make it 25.
20. You're right. I think that on second thought, that's better. Okay, anyway, everybody should be gesund, and we should have wonderful, wonderful times together here in Shalom Al Yisrael. Today's shiur, I want to learn 3 psukim. That's it. 3 psukim. I want to learn these 3 psukim because any 3 psukim in Torah are something to be learned. I want to learn these 3 psukim because we sort of touched upon them in one way or another over the last few weeks. And because there's so much to say about these 3 psukim, so let's learn the Chumash and the Rashi. And we will comment. This week is Parshas Vayechi. It's the end of Yaakov's life. He knows that death is coming. He gathers all of his children around him and he says, "Hey, also gather around me, and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen to you at the end of days." And then the parsha is called the parsha of the Birchot Yaakov, the blessings that Yaakov gives. Now, he doesn't really bless all of the sons. He has harsh things to say about Reuven, and then he comes to Shimon and Levi. Shimon v'Levi achim. Shimon and Levi are brothers. Of course, we're going to have to ask the question, well, we know that. there was no necessity for Yaakov Avinu to tell everybody on his deathbed that they're brothers. We know that. And there are going to be a number of different approaches in the Mefarshim. But first, let's read the Pesukim. Shimon Levi Achim, Shimon and Levi are brothers. Klei Chomos Mecheiro Sehem. Stolen tools of their weapons. The word Chomos over here, the way the English translation, and we'll see the Rashi, the weapons of violence are chomos in their hands. This is not the Rashi is going to explain. Violence is not the way we conduct ourselves. This is not something that they learn from us. And therefore he says, Besodom al tovo nafshi, in the secrets that they concoct, al tovo nafshi, let my soul not be there. Bekaholam, in their congregation, al teichad kavodi, let my honor not be there. Now, if you see different translations over here, everything is going to go over here. We're going to have to see all sorts of mafarshim. Ki ba'apam, why don't I want to be part of them? Ki ba'apam, because in their rage, harguish, they killed a man, ubiritzonam, and it was their wish that ikru shor, they hamstrung an ox. In other words, they made the ox incapable of moving by destroying the muscles in the foot of the ox. Orurapam kiyaz, let their anger, their rage be cursed, because it is mighty. Ve'evratam, and their wrath should be cursed. Ki koshosa, because it is harsh. Achalkein biYaakov, I will divide them in Jacob, v'afitzein biYisrael, and I will disperse them in Israel. Three psukim. Okay, let's begin with the Rashi. Shimon v'Levi Achim, and you have it in translation. And obviously, Rashi, in his first two words, without asking the question, is already giving the answer. Who? Yaakov has to tell me that they're brothers? So Rashi says, Shimon and Levi are brothers, Be'etzo Achas. They think alike. They were of one mind. We're not talking about biologically they are brothers. All 12 of them here are brothers. He's not saying that they are biological brothers, but he's saying that they are absolutely like-minded, like brothers. Al Shem v'al Yosef. They were together in their assault on Shem and what they wanted to do to Yosef. How do we know that they were the ones who planned the undoing of Yosef? It doesn't say it any place in Torah. It doesn't say it any place. So Rashi gives us a very fascinating pshat. When Yosef appears before his brothers out there in Dothan, his father had sent him to Shechem, he doesn't find them in Shechem, and he's given directions to go to Dothan. So it says, Vayomru ish el achiv, a man said to his brother, L'chu v'nahargeu, let us kill him. So Rashi wants to figure out, who is the man that spoke to his brother? Who could it have been? Of the 10 sons, who could it have been? So Rashi says, when the brothers saw Joseph approaching, the verse states, and they said to one another, V'aton now, l'chu v'nahargeu, come and let us kill him. Mihem, who are they who said this? In Toma, you're going to say Reuven or Yehuda. You can't say that it's Reuven or Yehuda because they did not agree to put him to death. Reuven is the one who said put him into the pit. Yehuda is the one who said sell him, let us not touch a hair on his head. So it couldn't have been Reuven or Yehuda. Had they always schemed about it, it cannot be, because they did not agree to Joseph being killed. In Toma, so who are you going to say? Maybe the Bnei Hashvachos, the sons of Bilha and Zilpah? No, it can't be. It doesn't make sense. Harei lo haitas sinatan shlema. They did not fully hate him because he was friendly with them. This too cannot be, for see now their hatred of Joseph was not total. Shenema, as it says, for who now has been a Bilhah, has been a Zilpah. He was a youth with the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah. So who do we have left? Yisachar and Zvulun, who are from the same mother as Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar and Zvulun. Lo hayu medabrim mifnei achayhem. They would not have spoken up in the presence of their older brothers. Yehuda was there. Shimon and Levi were there. Yisachar and Zvulun would not have done it. They would not have spoken in the presence of their brothers. Hagadolim mehem, who are older than them. So that only leaves that leaves only two. So it could only be you're forced to say Al Korchacha Shimon v'Levi. They're the ones who said, "Come, let us kill him." They're the ones whom their father called brothers, because these are the only two who would have spoken up, and the only two who therefore would have decided together to commit this terrible act. All right? We're going to see, of course, that the Ramban is going to take a completely different approach, so just let's hang in there. Klei chomos, stolen tools, umanut zu shel ritzicha, this craft of murder, chomos hu biyadeyem, is in their possession by theft. Mi birchas Esav hizu. Who was the one that was told that he will live by the sword? Esav. Umnot shalohu. It is his craft. Va'atem chamastem otahimenu. You've stolen the craft of killing from Esav. This is not yours. This is not yours.
It's the same Hamas that the word Hamas.
Yeah, you can do whatever with the word Hamas. Yes, they don't know that in Hebrew it means violence, or maybe they do know. In other words, they don't know how apt a name they chose for themselves. I don't even know what it means in Arabic. If anybody knows Arabic,
I didn't mean that. I
meant
the Hamas.
But what do you mean you didn't mean that? Of course you meant that.
I should have.
Yeah, so what did you mean?
The whole Hamas, the
only place it says Hamas before was. Oh no, it says a few places. By Noach it says about the Kimola Ha'oretz Hamas. The world, the earth, the land has become full of violence. Sarah also said to.
Yeah.
That's right, Hamasi Alecha. How is it spelled there? Right. We'll look later. Let's go. Mechedo Seyem, their weapons. Lishon Klei Zayin. Rashi says a Greek word, sword, is Mechedo. So therefore, Klei Chamos, Mechedo Seyem. The weapons that they use are clay chomos, are weapons that they have stolen. They've taken it from Esav. Tavaracha. Rashi says the second shot, Mechedo Seyem, means bad. It's Megurosom, in the land of their sojourns. Nohagu Atzman b'chlei chomos. They conducted themselves with the tools of violence, because Mechedo Seyem can also mean Meguro Seyem. Gimel and Chaf come of the same guttural sound, and Magor is a place where people live. In other words, in the land where they live, they conduct themselves with violence. Kimo, this is a pasuk in Yecheskel, Mechorosayich u Moldotayich. our word mecherusim is similar to mecherusayich in the land of your sojourns and your birthplace. Vizehu targum shel onklus. All right, so either mecherusim means weapons, or mecherusim means the lands in the land in which they lived. They conducted themselves with violence. Another pasuk, v'sodom al tovam nafshi. Rashi, let's see the Rashi. V'sodom al tovam nafshi, into their design may my soul not enter. Zeh ma'ase Zimri. The story of Zimri. The story of Zimri is the story that we are told at the end of Parshas Balak and the beginning of Parshas Pinchas. That Zimri ben Solu, who was a prince of the tribe of Shimon, is the one who takes the Midianite woman and brings her into the tent and wants to live with her. And along comes Pinchas, who is a Kohen from the tribe of Levi, and runs him through. Fascinating. The Shimon and Levi, who are Achim over here, are not Achim there. Everything has broken down by the end of Parshas Balak at the beginning of Pinchas. It is Pinchas from Shevet Levi, in a sense, in quotation marks, using violence, but it's against the tribe of Shimon. So he says, Besodom, I'll tabo nafshi, into their design may my soul not enter. Zeh ma'aseh Zimri. This refers to the incident of Zimri. Kishin eskatzu shiftu shel Shimon, of the tribe of Simon, gathered together conspiratorially, lahaviyat ha-Midyanit lefnei Moshe, to bring the Midianite woman before Moshe, v'yomrelo, and they said to him, zu asura o zu muteret, is this woman permitted or is she prohibited? Im tomar asura, if you're going to say that she is forbidden, but Yitro mihi tiraloch, who permitted to you to marry the daughter of Yitro, who is a Midianite? So Yaakov is saying here, Ayizochor shmi badavar, my name should not be mentioned there. And therefore it says in the Torah, Zimri ben Solui, Nasi Beit Avla Shimoni, Zimri ben Solu, leader of our father's house in Shimon, and it doesn't say that he's Ben Yaakov. Yaakov does not want to be mentioned there. And then B'Kaholam, there was another time, and this is already a time where Levi is the one who gathers a congregation against Moshe, and that's Korach. Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat, Korach the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kahat, and it doesn't say over there Ben Yaakov. That's the Kohol. Kishiyakil Korach. And over there it says, Vayakhel Korach. So therefore Rashi says, Bikaholam over here, Kihila, where they gathered. Korach, Shehum Yishifto Shalevi, at Kol Haed, the entire assembly, Al Moshe Varan, against Moshe and Aaron, Al Teichab Kivodin Shom, Al Yitiached Shemi Imahem, my name shall be not be mentioned with them. Onto the second side, right over there, Shenema, Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kahat, Ben Levi, below Nemar, it doesn't say Ben Yaakov, Abu Bidure Ayamin. In Divrei Ayamin, they're going to talk about the sons of Korach who are tzaddikim. There they're going to be mentioned, it will be mentioned that they are from Yaakov. Kishenit Yaksu Bnei Korach Raduchum, the lineage of the sons of Korach is given regarding the platform. Those who stood up to sing in the Bet HaMikdash, there it says, Ben Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kahat, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael. Alright. Let's go to the, let's skip a piece and go to the piece of Kiva Apom Harguish. For in their rage, they killed a man. Who is the man that they killed in their rage? El Chamor v'Anshei Shechem. These are Chamor and the people of Shechem. So why does it say Ish singular when we're talking about the massacre of a whole city? Ve'enam chashuvin. No, wait a minute. I don't like the word massacre. Exacting judgment. I mean, by massacre, I'm already passing judgment on them, and I don't want to do that. So why is it singular? In their rage, they killed a man. They were all considered no more than but a single man. As far as Shimon and Levi was concerned, it was like a battle against one man. It also says by Gidon, the Shofet, the judge in Sefer Shoftim, v'hikita at Midyan, the angel tells him that you will strike Midyan ke'ish echad, as though they are one person. V'chein v'mitzchayim, by Egypt, it also says, suz v'roch v'orom avayam, a horse and its rider, he heaves into the sea. Singular, singular, because as far as God is concerned, they're all, it's all one. Upshutai, but Rashi says the simple meaning is the following. It does mean plural, but it's a manner of speech to use a singular to describe a plural. Zelmas Rashi, upshuto, anoshim harbe, koreish, many men are called a man. Because when you talk about a man, you mean this man, that man, the next man, 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 all of them together, or talked about singly, but it means all of them together. Kol ish shekasul ba'apam hargu, with their rage or their anger at anybody that they got angry at. V'chein v'yilmat litrof trof odom ochal. All right, that it means their rage went out against anybody who they got angry with. So now Rashi has explained ba'apam hargu ish, with their rage they killed a man. The man chamor and shchem uberitzonam ikru shor. And it was their wish to destroy the ox. Who is the ox? Rotzu laker et Yosef. Yosef is going to be described by Moshe in Parashat Zot Habracha. V'chor shoro hodor lo v'karne de'em karno. The metaphor that is used for Yosef is the might of the ox. Rotzu laker et Yosef. They wanted to eliminate Yosef, who's called Shor, Shenema, Bechor, Shoro, Hodolo, the chief of his ox, glorious is. And the word Ikru comes from the word Suseim Ta'ake, you shall hamstring their horses. Okay, we'll stop over here in the Rashi. We'll have to get back to the rest. Now I wanted to go on to the next page, the Ramban. The Ramban. It looks like a formidable Rabban. I always try to put you at ease. Let's see the first sentence of the Ramban. Shimon v'Levi achim, yomar balei achva ki yecham libam al achotam. There is a brotherhood in them because of their feeling of brotherhood. Their hearts became full of warmth, heat, meaning passion. Passion. The Ramban is going to say the following. Rashi had said, Achim Hain, we said, this is the unasked question, but obviously we have to understand what it means. Why does it say that they're brothers? So he says that they did what they did out of a sense of deep brotherhood, which means, therefore, fascinatingly enough, even Yaakov Avinu, who is now going to condemn them, but he, at the beginning of his words, he is speaking well of them. He says, I understand their motivation. Yilamed aleim schut. Yaakov Avinu is talking about their merit, ki bekana otam et al ha'achva, also much also because of their zealousness about their brotherhood or sisterhood, they did what they did. Lomar shehem ru'uyim la'onish gadol v'lo ha'chet ro'uy limchol ki hu chamos, meaning that they deserve punishment. It was a great sin, but we know why they did it. The fact that they are achim. The fact is the Or HaChaim says that the word achim, at one point he wants to say that the word achim doesn't even come from the word brother. It comes from the word chom. the heated passion, they are passionate people. There's Shimon and Levi, their personalities are such that of all the brothers, they are the ones, because they are, you know, you could say it in a number of ways. You can say passionate, you can say hot-headed. That might, of course, translate Achim very well, but he says Achim doesn't come from the word brother, because remember, brother, we know that they're brothers. Yaakov doesn't have to tell us that. And then a little bit further we'll go, and then we're going to skip over here. V'anochem b'einayim, what's correct in my eyes, shomar ki shimon v'levi achim gemurim domim u'misachim zeh lazeh batzosam u'b'maaseh. He is now coming closer to Rashi. He says, I want to tell you that most probably Yaakov is saying that they are brothers because in their counsel and in their deeds, mit achim, they are like one. Ukvar pirashti, I've already explained, and we learned this Ramban. Ki Yaakov kotzav al Shimon v'Levi v'horgam anshei huyir. Ba'avur shalsu chamas, Yaakov was angry at Shimon and Levi because they killed the people of the city, because it was an act of violence. Ki heim lo chotu lehem klal, the people of the city didn't sin against them. Ubo bebrit, they had the brit v'nimolu, when they were circumcised. The Ramban goes on to talk about these people could very well have been like the nefesh asher osu b'choron that Avram and Sarah brought tachas kanfei hashchina, and here it is, these converts who could have filled the demographic ranks of the Jewish people. The Ramban seems to say that look what they did. And then the Rabban is going to go on to say there's another thing that upsets Yaakov. He doesn't want that anybody should think that he had any part in all of this. And that's why he's going to say, I don't want to be mentioned with them. Leave me out of it. The Ramban is going to learn at the end. You can't see it all, but I'll tell you what it's saying, you trust me. Ki biyapam hargu ish means that in their anger they killed the people of Shem, that's ish. Uberitzonam ikru shor. And it was because of their will that they uprooted the ox. What did Rashi say the ox is? Yosef. Yosef, who's called Bechor Shoro Hodo. No. You know what the Ramban says? No. The Ramban says, "Uberitzonam ikru shor." It says back there, and we learned the psukim, that after they had killed all of the males in the city, they destroyed all of the livestock. What's absent? There's one thing that's absent in the Ramban. Nowhere does the Ramban say anything about what they intended to do to Yosef. Just about all of the Mefarshim say, listen, they wanted to kill Yosef, and Rashi gave us the process of elimination by which he knows that the man who spoke to his brother, that was Shimon and Levi, who conspired against Yosef. The Ramban, long Ramban, not a word about Yosef. There is no condemnation of Yaakov against Shimon and Levi about Yosef. So I just want to point out, maybe it's an important thing to point out, that the Ramban is being very faithful to his Shita. There's a little small Rambanala over here that's from last week's Sedra. I've always felt this is one of the great Rambans. The Ramban is talking about the Pasuk, the brothers come home from Egypt and they tell Yaakov, Pa! Yosef is alive! And it says, Vayedabru Elov et kol divrei Yosef. They said to him, they told their father all the words of Yosef. I'll read it. Yir Eli al derech hapshat. This is a very, very important Ramban. It seems to me, according to the pshat, Shelo hugad li Yaakov kol yamav Ki echov machru et Yosef. Yaakov, during his whole lifetime, nobody ever told him that the brothers sold Yosef. This is the derech hapshat of the Ramban, and the Ramban is now going to make his own process of elimination. In other words, Yaakov, till his dying day, never knew what the brothers did to Yosef. Abel Choshav, he thought to himself, how did he reconstruct that day? He thought, ki hu toa basodeh, because he found out from the brothers that they were not in Shechem, and he knows that he sent them to Shechem. Most probably Yaakov has terrible feelings of guilt as how, like, I sent him to the wrong place. He was wandering in the field, and those who found him took him and sold him to Egypt. Now he gives the process of elimination. Who was going to tell? Who would be the one to go over and say, Pa, I cannot tell a lie. We sold your mezinical over there, your yingala. Who's going to do it? So Ram says, the brothers certainly didn't want to tell their sin to the father. They were afraid for their lives, lest he's going to curse them. He'll get angry and curse them, as he did to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. They knew what was waiting for them if they would tell their father what happened. Yosef, because of his goodness, he's a moral and ethical individual. What's he going to do? Can you imagine? Can you believe what your Beit Shekluch did to me? Do you understand what they did? Yosef is Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef is Yosef HaTzadik. By the way, what would he gain? He would cause a rift in the family that would never be healed. He would make his father so sick that who knows what would happen. Yosef wasn't going to go tell, boy, you really raised a good bunch of kids over here. They sold me into slavery. Chas v'sholem, he would never do that. Well, akach nema. Therefore, it says at the end of Parshas Vayechi, Vayitzavu el Yosef Lamor, after they come back from the funeral of Yaakov, they say to him, they're really lying. They're lying, and they say that, you know, your father commanded us that you should be nice to us. Would Yaakov have known about the sale? If Yaakov would have known, then you know what the brothers would have done as they stood around the deathbed? They would have begged their father, tell Yosef not to cause us any harm. And instead, what they have to do is make up a story that, you know, your father commanded that you should be nice to us. It wasn't true. They should have asked him, ki yisoponav v'lo yamre devaro, because they knew that Yosef would not rebel against his father's words. If they would have had Yaakov tell Yosef to be nice to his brothers, they wouldn't have to be frightened after the father's death. They wouldn't have to make up all these stories. So therefore, with this one Ramban, we can understand, if you ever learn the Ramban on Parshat Vayechi, Ramban is not going to mention Mechiras Yosef. Rashi is going to be talking about Mechiras Yosef, the sale of Yosef, time and time again. When in the next bracha, when he's going to say, Yehuda, miterem v'ni olisa, you rose from above the crime that was committed to my son. Ramban has a whole different pshat. Rashi says that Yehuda was not guilty of the sale of Yosef. So this is an approach that's taken by the Ramban. By the way, with this approach from the Ramban, I can also understand why Yosef didn't write a letter home. He didn't write a letter home because he has no way of knowing what's going on at home. He has no way of knowing what story they have concocted. He does not want in any way to be the one who may open up a Pandora's box that will ultimately mean the destruction of the whole family. Yes.
I think sometimes,
I'm not sure, I don't know which one, but Yosef, never alone with his father. He always was with his sons because he didn't want his father to ask him how did you get the son. Interesting, I never heard that. She says that one of the Farshim says that they never left Yosef alone with Yaakov, so he shouldn't be able to tell. I don't know, I get a feeling the Ramban's few words about Yosef, b'musaro hatov, because of his morality.
Yaakov could have asked him, how did you end up in Mitzrayim?
Yeah, so I would say the same thing. If Yaakov would have asked him, then he would, because of Musaro Atov, of his morality and his goodness, he was not going to be dragged into a conversation where he would say the truth. That's the approach of the Ramban, and it's a, I think that there's a great deal to say for it. Yes?
Rav Gold, it's surprising that Yaakov had Ruach HaKodesh in so many instances, but in this particular instance in regard to Yosef, it's surprising that
Ruach HaKodesh is something that is given to a person by God. What happens if God chooses not to give him Ruach HaKodesh? And by the way, I will take you back for a few moments to a shiur that I said some years ago. Medrash Tanchuma that's brought by Rashi. What a great Medrash Tanchuma. I didn't plan on saying this Medrash today, but I'm going to tell it to you now because I let you ask that question. The Medrash says that after they sold Yosef, Yehuda said, let us place a ban of excommunication that no one should tell father what we did. So they said, but we're only nine, and for a ban of excommunication you need a minion. So they said, we're going to include the Rabbeinu Shlalem, he's going to be number 10. And God agreed. Reuven comes back, the Medrash goes on to say that Reuven comes back and he takes a look into the pit and Yosef isn't there and he says, Vei ono ani bo, what's going to happen with me? So they sat him down and they told Reuven exactly what they did, and they told him that there's a ban of excommunication, and Reuven accepted upon himself the ban of excommunication. The Medrash goes on to say, Yitzchak knew, and Yitzchak accepted the chedem not to tell Yaakov. Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Medrash ends by saying, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say it in davening every day, Magid Devorov LeYaakov, he says his words to Yaakov, Dovor Ze Lo Omar, this God never told him. There's the answer, God never told him. It's a very profound Medrash, but if I go into that, I'm not going to have a shiur left. I will not have a shiur. Yes?
Me, the little one, may I say something? I think he had, Yaakov Avinu had, Ruach HaKodesh. Hulor Yachol Hayal Itnachen, because Mishachai lo mitnacham Yashar mitnachem.
But God didn't tell it. The point is that the Rebbein Shem, Ruach HaKodesh comes from the Rebbein Shem. If the Rebbein Shem doesn't say it, if he's not going to say it, he's certainly not going to say it to Yaakov. He's not going to say it to anybody. The Rebbein Shem was part of the Cherem. The only problem that may be with that is that at some point, the Cherem has been lifted. At what point is the Cherem lifted? The first time in 22 years that they even mention Yosef, when they're standing in front of this cruel, brutal tyrant, Safna Paneach, who has now incarcerated them all, they say, Avol Hashemim Anachnu, we are guilty, Alochinu B'sareinu, about the flesh and blood, our brother, Shelo Shamanu, we didn't hear when he pleaded before us. And then, at that moment, Reuven feels that he has also been freed now from the ban of excommunication, and he says, Halo Amarti Lachem, I told you, Al Techtu Vayeled, don't sin about this child. And you didn't listen to me. Al Kain Ba'aleinu, that's why Hatzara Hazos has happened, because you didn't listen to me. Alright. But wait a minute, we have so much more to do over here. So much more. Okay. Let's take it to one more Rashi. Oh no, here. One more Rashi. And the last pasuk. Ororapam kiyaz, let their anger, their wrath be cursed. So Rashi says, Afilu b'shor tov chocha, that's pasuk 7. Afilu b'shor tov chocha, even at the time that he admonishes them at rebuke, lo kilel elo apam, he cursed only their rage. And that's what Bilam said, Ma ekov lo kapo kail, how can I curse that which God has not cursed? Therefore he imposes upon Shimon and Levi, Achalkein b'Yakov, Va'afitzein b'Yisrael, I will divide them in Jacob, Afridein, Zemizeh, I'm going to separate one from another. Shelo Yehei Levi b'minyan Ashvatim, Levi is not going to be counted amongst the tribes. There are 12 tribes and Levi is not one of the 12 tribes. The place of Levi is taken by Menashe and Ephraim. Manasseh and Ephraim, Yosef becomes two, and Levi is not one of the tribes. Vahadehem chalukim, and therefore now Shimon and Levi are divided from one another. Shimon is a tribe, and Levi isn't one of the tribes. And another thing, Rashi says, Ein lecho aniim v'sofrim umelamdei tenokot elu mishimon. From Shimon you have poor, the scribes, the ones who write Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzahs, and Melamdei Tinokos, teachers, come from Shimon. Kedei sheyunefutzim, so they should be spread out. V'shiftu shel Levi. Levi was given 48 different cities, and they're the ones that have to go to the threshing floors to receive the Maisa, the tithe, the tenth that's given to them. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, this violent Shimon is entrusted with Jewish children, Rashi says? He's going to be the teacher, you understand? The man of violence is the one who's going to be a teacher. Shine that Klagis Choloi's kicking. And not only that, Shimon is the one who's going to make sure that we have kosher tefillin and mezuzahs and Sifrei Torah. What's Rashi talking about? Very beautiful piece. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So Rabbi Yaakov, in the parasha where the story took place, and what was their response, their great response to Yaakov's rebuke at the time of the incident was, Hachizono Yasas Achoseinu. Is our sister going to be treated as a harlot? So Yaakov Avinu understood that there's great strength, great familial pride in Shimon and Levi. These two, different than all of the brothers, they are the ones who are incapable of remaining silent. They had to get out there and do something. And by the way, it was more than just doing something. They bring Dina home. They bring Dina home. This was a great act. Maybe it was done with anger, I don't know, maybe we talked about this already. There's a great deal to say on behalf of Shimon and Levi. Yaakov understood that on the one hand they have to be divided, because together they become a terribly, terribly destructive force. The two of them together, we can't be sure what's going to happen with these two. But if they are separated, then that great patriotism, that great warmth, that great passion is something that Klal Yisrael needs. And we need to spread the Shimon and Levi ideas have to be spread around Klal Yisrael. A Rebbe, listen, to be a Rebbe and a teacher of children, you need to be a passionate person. You have to feel that this is the most important thing in the world. You have to feel that you hold the destiny and the future of the Jewish people in your hands. You have to feel that every child that you are going to be able to influence is going to be striking another blow on behalf of Klal Yisrael. The people without passion are not going to be the great teachers. The people without that sense of destiny and purpose may be better off in some kind of another profession. Certainly when one takes into consideration what the pay scale is, you certainly need a tremendous amount of mysterious nefesh in order to go into that profession. Anybody who's going to go into it because it's a profession, no good. You have to go into it with a sense of great mission and great purpose. But somewhere along the line, Rav Yaakov says, something went wrong. Because we're going to find in Torah, Levi, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain and he sees that the Jewish people are worshipping the Egel, he says, Mila Hashem Elai, who is with me? Who is with me and God? All the people of Levi gathered around him. They were the ones that went through the camp and destroyed the worshippers of idols. By Zimri, it's going to be Pinchas, Shevet Levi. He is going to do what had to be done, what even Moshe Rabbeinu himself could not do. In Shimon, it never came to fruition. In Shimon, it turned out that this great passion was used for a terrible, terrible avela when Zimri ben Salu takes the Midianite into the tent. What went wrong? They both had similar strengths. They both had this passion. They're achim. What went wrong? So he says that in the years in the Midbar, in Mitzrayim, Levi were freed from work. And Levi studied Torah in Egypt. Passion, patriotism, great strength has to be tempered by Torah and Halacha. Not every kanoyis is Torah kanoyis. I mean, of course, the most extreme example is Chassidish Yidden going to Tehran is a kanoyis that is not really destructive. They're sick. They're obviously sick people. They're very sick people. They look at themselves as the great kanoyim, you understand? This is a kanois without Torah. It's a kanois without Torah. I don't want to say any more. I'll keep, you know, I may get a little, you know.
Political.
I mean, not political. No, not political. This is not political at all. No. Down with Olmert anyway, but this is not political.
No.
Not going to do that. But they grow from a certain, they do grow from a certain community that has despised the state of Israel for 60 years. So they grow from a certain community. That community cannot say that we are not guilty of all of this. This is passion. This is passion gone awry. All wrong. And because it's not Torah. It's not Torah. Levi, who sat and studied Torah, was the one who therefore was able to take all of that great passion and anger and use it in a positive way. Shimon didn't succeed in doing that. So therefore by Shimon it became destructive. Yes?
I think Yosef must have understood that because he kept Shimon in prison but let him go.
That's good, I like that. And I think there's a Rashi that says nearly the just about the same word. She said, Yosef must have understood that because when he sends the brothers back home, he leaves Shimon in prison. And I think Rashi over there says he wanted to separate Shimon and Levi because those two together are a dynamic duo that are destructive.
Yeah, but he didn't keep Levi.
He took Shimon.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the point she's making. That's very nice. In other words, he had this deep insight that Levi et nachveren a mensch, but Shimon, But it's difficult, you know, it's still difficult to say that. Remember, on the other hand, who's the one, according to Chazal, Shimon married Dina. Shimon took Dina under his wing. Shimon is the one who went out of his way in order to take care of this sister. I mean, let's listen to the words of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, and take a look what he does with this pasuk. It's a beautiful what he does. Look at the words of the pasuk: Achalkein biYaakov, vaAfitzein biYisrael. Four words. You see those four words? At first, the end of the three psukim, we're learning three psukim, the end of the three psukim. Ordered up on Kios, Vebrosom, Kikoshosa, back on the first page, Achalkein bi Yaakov, Vaafitzein bi Yisrael. I will divide them in Jacob and I will disperse them in Israel. Each one of these words is significant. The first phrase talks about Yaakov. The second phrase talks about Yisrael. The first phrase uses the word Achalkein. The second one uses the word Afitzein. What's the picture that we have in our minds? The picture that we have in our minds is these two guys have to be separated. We've got to spread them out. We can't have them together. Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, completely different shot. First of all, he takes the word achalkein, lechalek. Lechalek means to divide. Does lechalek mean to divide with the intention of breaking up something that was a whole? No. When I cut up a cake, in order to give everybody a piece of the pie, so am I dividing the cake because I want to destroy the cake of shticker and get it into crumbs? I want meat slices so that everybody should have a piece of the pie. Lechalek is a word that usually its intention is very, very positive. You need a chelik. What are Klal Yisrael called? What's the neshama? The neshama of a Jew is called chelik eloka mimal. It is a piece of divinity. God gave us a neshama, and this neshama is a portion that was given to us, a mamish, divine origin. L'chalek is always positive. And what about Afitzein, to disperse? A publisher or distributor is called a mefitz. Now, he's not distributing weapons. A distributor of food, of svarim, of books, is a mefitz. Okay? Is that terribly negative? That's not negative at all. So now here we're looking at this pasuk and we think to ourselves that this is a terrible punishment that's being brought down upon Shimon and Levi. Once you know the meaning of these words, so he says the following: all Jews need a piece of Shimon and a piece of Levi. Now, Shimon and Levi, in their pristine, full measure, explosive. But if you dole it out to Klal Yisrael, oh, does that become a powerful, powerful positive force. Everybody needs a shtickle Shimon and a shtickle Levi. It says, accordingly, the danger to the people by Shimon and Levi's excessive impetuosity and choleric disposition. It sounds bad, right? is only present at a time, and here he makes a very, very important point. He says, "Achalken be Yaakov, va'afitzen be Yisrael." He says that Yaakov represents the Jews out in the exile. Yisrael refers to Jews in the state of Israel. That he used such a term 100 years before there was a state of Israel. I think that's exactly what he, someplace over here, he says the following. Out in the exile, where Jews are downtrodden, where there's the great threat all the time of a loss of Jewish identity, you need Shimon and Levi's badly. You need them like you need air to breathe, because the possibility of Jews being submerged and overwhelmed by the general culture is so strong. What you need is Shimon and Levi's all over, those who are going to inspire and instill a sense of pride in Jewish dignity and in Jewish identity. There you need Shimon and Levi's. Wherever they are, you need Shimon and Levi's. But he says, if we're talking about a time when Jews are living in their own land, and the responsibility of running a Klal Yisrael is in the hands of a central government, then this kind of powerful concoction called Shimon and Levi could be extremely, extremely explosive and destructive. There, afitzim, disperse them all over, very small doses. Afitzim is very small doses. Achalkein, pieces, significant pieces. Achalkein, be Yaakov. Out there in the exile, when Jews are Yaakov and have not reached the level of being Yisrael, there you have to apportion them out in good portions. Every community needs Shimon and Levi's in order to survive, to maintain their dignity, their identity, their connection to Klal Yisrael. In Galut, where the pressure of our fate bows everything down and the nation itself torn asunder, there the danger lies that all feelings of one's own importance becomes lost, and the sense of oppression kills all spiritual force and energy, that even the wandering Jew peddling through Europe still looked down on the street boys of the various countries with proud feeling of his own value, that the Jew in Europe was able to look down on the hooliganis of Poland and Russia is only because he retained a sense of his own dignity even under the worst conditions. For that, Achalken B'Yaakov, it was of the greatest benefit that the tribes of Shimon and Levi were scattered and apportioned out amongst the other tribes. The majority of teachers came from the tribe of Shimon. But when we are talking about a state, there, that mixture of Shimon and Levi can be a destructive one. Which means the following. According to Rav Samson and Ferdel Hirsch, Achalken B'Yaakov, Va'afitzen B'Yisrael, I will divide them amongst Yaakov, and I will disperse them in Israel, is not at all a punishment. Because after all is said and done, Yaakov Avinu understands the great power that Shimon and Levi have. The important thing is that power has to be channeled in positive directions. It has to be turned in and channeled into a great force for the well-being of the Jewish people. And as Rabbi Yaakov said, in Torah, in the biblical period anyway, Levi was the one who was able to rise to the challenge. He was able to temper and to modify and correct and turn all of that great passion and all of that great strength into something of real, real significance for the Jewish people. And Shimon failed. Shimon failed in that respect. So that Yaakov Avinu is not simply attacking them. He understands their motives. He understands what it is that moved them, and he understands that they are necessary for Klal Yisrael. Every one of the tribes is necessary, and that Shimon v'Levi ultimately are the ones that are going to instill that great sense of Jewish identity by Klal Yisrael.
Is anything back? Tuesday, next week.
Tuesday, next week. It's very good seeing you. It's very good seeing you. I really... I may yet have to be there at the beginning of February. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think so.
We're good.
I don't, right now, the truth is I have no interest in traveling, but I just want to stay here and relax a little bit. If you can relax in this country. Thank you very much. Thank you. Siakovan. Wait, I have to give him a title. If I don't give him a title, I'm finished.
I'd just like to tell you how extremely upset Linda and Alex were that they didn't make it to the dinner. Really, really upset. He had a truck and a bus zigzagging in front of him. Anyway, I got those.
It wasn't nice to be remembered. Thank you very much.
I hope somebody takes the video for you so you'll have it.
Yes. I understand. Shimon and Levi. Huh? Wait, control passion? Control the passion. No, I don't like it. Stop. Sitting on lazy. This or that? Sinners or saints?
Good. Thank you very much. Last week we had a bar mitzvah. We need some of your stuff for our talk. I hope that we'll have one next week.
Howard! I finally understand it all.
What?
I understand what you've been doing for the last 5 years. I know this. It's blowing my mind.
Look up, go to your magazine and look up the word quick study. You'll see his picture.
What should he look up?
Quick study.
Study. It took you 5 years.
5 years to understand what he's doing. Yes.
So I just want to say that when we are dispersed, we need compassion, power, identity, and so forth. And when we are united in peace, we do not need egotism in our heading our government.
The fact is that there was more. Even in Israel, I sort of threw in a sentence that, you know, we need it spread around.
Right.
Because we can't survive now without passionate people.
But not egos.
We don't talk about that.
I call them bulldozers.
Yeah.
We don't need bulldozers.